From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready. I remain in the Clark Ford studio. Neil finishing up the trip to California, where after this many days, probably going to need a vacation to solve his vacation. We're going to finish up with a podcast this week. We'll be back in the studio next week with normal shows and normal hours for you guys. The podcast brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. You're coming to town for the weekend. Stop in, get a daiquiri, as little as $3.99, as big as 44 ounces. And while you're there, make sure you download the Speed Pass Plus. That allows you to save money by paying right there at the pump with your mobile device. When you do that, you avoid credit card skimmers, identity theft, and all the negatives that sometimes hit gas stations. Won't hit Blue Sky with Speed Pass Plus. And again, I'm in the Clark Ford studio.
Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line, hassle-free. Get your quote, and the rest is up to you. You can take that quote and shop it at your other dealers. See if you can get something better. You won't. I'll go ahead and tell you. And then you'll end up going back to Corey. We'll make the deal even better. The end of your deal with Corey, tell him you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our family of podcasts, and it's $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
You were pretty fresh early in the week. You're starting to sound a little tired. I'm getting a little different different tones from your voice. I'm sensing exhaustion as we get close to the weekend.
Yeah, I'm tired. It's no big deal. We were in L.A. all day yesterday, and we squeezed probably 2 days of L.A. into one, and then it was Shohei Ohtani bobblehead night at Angel Stadium. Carson and I made our way to Anaheim. I like cities, and L.A.'s pretty. You couldn't pay me to fight that traffic day in and day out. You couldn't pay me, Chase, to think about it. Anyway, we got there, went to the game. I noticed when you talked to Ross Bjork about Vaught Hemingway, and you made a statement about lipstick, basically lipstick on a pig. The Angels have done a great job of putting lipstick on the pig that is Angel Stadium. They've really dressed it up nicely since the last time I was in there. It doesn't have the amenities of some of the new parks and stuff, but considering what they're working with, they've done a really good job. I saw Albert Pujols hit two home runs last night against Seattle, so I got to see Pujols homer in person and not be traumatized. That was a nice change. James Paxton of the Mariners didn't make it through the first inning, had back issues, so I'm sure our friend Scott Service did not sleep particularly well last night after the game. But we went to Anaheim. We left after 7 and got back. And so it was a late night. But you know me, man. I'm up and at 'em. Just pouring coffee down my gullet just as fast as I can.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked this on the podcast. I mean, my only L.A. experience was just getting from LAX to Long Beach on that Friday before the game that didn't happen because it was rained out. And I grossly underestimated just how long that was going to take on, I guess, the 405 or whatever that highway is through, or interstate is through there. Because it was not a long trip as the crow flies, but it took well over an hour and put at least my ability to check into the hotel and then get to the park on time in jeopardy. So it was good.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of California. Took what was described as the scenic path from Monterey to Los Angeles and went through like the hills of Central California. There was a lot of wine country. And I look back in the car, Laura's asleep, and all three kids are on devices with their headphones in. And it's just me, man. And I'm fighting those hills. And it was, I was glad to get out of the car. It's beautiful, though. I mean, it's gorgeous, gorgeous land. That is, I don't know if you've ever been in that part of the state. I really never had before, between Monterey and L.A. It was gorgeous. Just, I mean, gorgeous. The wine country and stuff, beautiful.
So typically that path, what you've done, would not necessarily be high up on the list for the family vacation. Or are you happy with it played out as far as each member of the family getting good things throughout the week?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it, you know how it is. I mean, you grew up in Mississippi. I grew up in Louisiana. There's not a hell of a lot of difference. I don't know about romanticize, but California has a mythological almost quality to it when you're a kid, certainly for my kids, because it's so much in pop culture and they, you know, Caroline, we should have probably changed the spelling of Caroline's name from C-A-R-O to K-A-R-O because she's so into the Kardashians. It would have been a more natural fit. There's so much romanticizing of I'll tell you this funny story. So we're on the field at AT&T Park in San Francisco. And I mean, on the field, I mean, just 20 feet from home plate, basically. And Caroline points over to the third base dugout and she goes, "That's where Kim and Kanye were when he proposed," or whatever.
Oh my God. Like,
you're like, what? And it's just so much. And she's like, "Oh yeah, and right over there is where this happened. And I was laughing about it. It was just so funny. I mean, but, you know, I mean, she's a 15-year-old girl. I mean, that's what she's into, is, you know, the pop culture stuff. So much of the pop culture is California based and all of that. So I think it's good for them to see it and take some of the mythology off of it and some of the romanticism off of it and see that it's just a normal place with normal people and ungodly traffic.
Yeah, you just called Southern California a normal place with normal people, but congratulations. That's good.
But there are, I mean, they're freaks. Don't get me wrong.
I know.
But, you know, there's a lot of just normal people just trying to make their way.
Well, that was the neat thing about Long Beach. I mean, and I get that's not Hollywood or Malibu, but I mean, their environment was quaint in a very positive way. It was just probably the same fans at every game and the players' parents and kind of an all in this together, cheer for both teams, lazy Sunday afternoon with a beer. I mean, we talked about this, but I mean, I'll reiterate just a little bit. I cover so much college baseball in these huge stadiums, and even, you know, it's all this stuff, forget what the professional ranks is like, but even college, it's these huge stadiums and the such this importance on winning today on this Tuesday and message boards and everything. There was kind of a cool feeling about Long Beach where even at the weekend they lost 2 out of 3, everybody had a good time, they shook hands, hugged, and they'll see them again on Tuesday night and all is well. It felt like a really cool high school venue in a way.
And that can be refreshing.
Yeah, it was neat. I had a good time.
Yeah, it's why sometimes you go to a basketball game at one of the mid-major places, you know, like in Murfreesboro or Bowling Green or Evansville or someplace like that. You walk out of those places going, that's kind of fun, as opposed to sometimes at the SEC level where it's just so damned intense. And I don't mean that in a negative way, except there's so much of, like, you see it in SEC venues, winning is not fun. Winning's just relief. Losing, fans start going to games dreading losing. That's where sometimes it's kind of fun to attend a game like last night where I didn't care who won, Angels, Mariners. I wanted to see Mike Trout. Mike Socha was kind enough to not play Shohei Ohtani on the one night we were there. But, you know, we got to see Trout, got Pujols tied Ken Griffey's record. Ken Griffey's for 6th on the all-time home run list. He hit 2 last night. I watched, you know, we had a pretty good seat where we could watch Tyler Skaggs, the left-hander for Anaheim, work, and he was good. it was fun, you know, to just go to a game and enjoy a game, and the outcome does not affect your mood at all, one way or the other.
I'm trying to think of the last time I went to a game that I was not working or watching teams I gave a crap about, and I'm not sure I can come up with something. I don't know.
Yeah, for me, it was when Ole Miss played in Cal last year, and I went to a Diamondbacks Giants game and enjoyed it thoroughly because I kind of started people watching. I wasn't really even watching the game. I was just hanging out at the ballpark, having a beer. It is fun. I mean, if you can ever get to that place, and for us, I mean, the games we work, you're working. You're always thinking, what am I going to write? What are we going to talk about? What am I going to write about? What am I going to ask? You know, how much longer until we get out of here? Those kind of things. When you just get to go to a game and just kind of chill and watch it, it's cool.
I mean, I swear, I think it's maybe has been Omaha for Ole Miss in the College World Series, because on one of the off nights, Keith Kessinger and I went and watched Texas UC Irvine, and you just got the hot dog and the beer and sat somewhere in the, you know, behind home plate and just sort of kind of watched a game going on that you weren't really even watching. So that might be it. I don't know that I've done it in 5 years. That's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
I think about it. I need to do that.
Well,
go to some game that I don't care. But it's my job. Sometimes it's going, hey, let's go find a game, because you hadn't seen one of those in at least 18 hours. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's why when people sometimes will get irritated at people like you and me on a – not irritated, but I think they get baffled, like on – you'll see somebody on Sunday, and they'll say, did you watch this game? Did you watch this game? And it's like, no, I mean, I don't know about you. I think you're a little different than me. Like, if let's say Ole Miss plays at 11, I'm at the stadium at 9:15, game's over at 2:30-ish. We get out of the stadium at 5:30-ish. There's a lot of those times, by the time I get home, the last thing I really want to watch is football. And I might turn a game on, but it's more background. I'm less inclined to get just like locked into a college game because I've just spent basically 9 hours covering college football. So you're kind of looking for something different, a break. I'm much more inclined 7 o'clock at night after one of those days. I'm much more inclined to get locked into a movie, for example. I mean, I'll turn games on, but it's more casual flipping, and I'm not really paying attention. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I really like them as background noise. Like you said, when you turn the grill on or you pour the drink, and it's, you know, 7 o'clock at night, it's probably that Big 12 game, so you've got Oklahoma State playing Texas or something, and it's okay, fine. Throw the ball around, score some points. I'll sort of glance at it occasionally, and if it's tight with 6 to go, then you might get my emotional capital for a few minutes.
Yeah, but if the football gods came down and froze time and said to you, what's the score?
Oh, no clue.
You'd be like, oh, man, I don't know. Can I look at the screen real quick? And, you know, I mean, I don't even know winning. How's the game going? What's happening with Texas's defense? I'm not really paying attention. That's where I think it's different. I mean, you know, as opposed to someone who, you know, believe me, far from complaining, I love what I do for a living. It's just when you get finished with game day, by the time you get home or back to your hotel or whatever, you're not, at least for me. I mean, I know people on this deal who they watch football from the moment game day kicks off, like the ESPN game day show or whatever with Corso, and they watch every minute of that through the final snap of Hawaii and San Diego State at 1 a.m. I can't do that. I used to years and years ago, but it's just harder now.
Yeah. So, well,
so what did you think of?
Go ahead.
We'll tease it here. We'll go to the break after I ask you this. Tell me. I know there's been a lot of reaction on the message board to your interview with Ross Bjork. I'm curious to get your thoughts on what he said and maybe how he said it.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go into that in 1 second. Be right back here on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
We take a break from the show to tell you that the podcast is brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a great one when you get Robert Gambrell. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando at 662-342-7700 or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. The podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades, and no one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry does. If you are in the market for a home or a condo in or around Oxford, go to his site, harryalexander.com, click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, filter through by what you're looking for. The results that you see are updated daily, and then you just send Harry an email. He'll take care of the rest, ha@harryalexander.com. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Now back to the Oxford Exxon podcast.
So you'll you got to mention in there at the end of the show, or when I got done with Ross, I guess you would say, we discussed the fact that he's going to a Cubs Cardinals game here soon. I told him that if he wanted to win, he should just take Carson with him, and he should feel really good about the Cardinals' chances to win the game in St. Louis.
He was
a little baffled by your son's record, but we got a little laugh out of it. He told me he only puts mustard on a hot dog. We discussed beer choices, talked a little about that at the end of the show, but you know, overall, I thought that, and it's what I led with because I kind of assumed it. I told Ross at the very beginning of the show, and I mean, anybody that's listening's obviously heard this, but I'll kind of give people my mindset going in. And I'm writing a little bit about this too, just some things I'm posting on the site in a minute when we get done with this. Is he was hired March or April of 2012, and you obviously have the get to know period, the honeymoon period. Normalcy is not your first few months on the job because you're learning and trying to figure out the people and the culture and the dynamic and everything else. And then he hires a women's basketball coach that in October of that year, before he ever coaches a game, he has to fire and then admit to tons of NCAA improprieties that, frankly, unlike the football search or the football thing later, pretty serious in a lot of ways where there were several moving parts that made it a no-brainer for penalties. So, Ole Miss and Ross, well, Ross is never, and Ole Miss hasn't had an NCAA free athletic year since 2010, 2011, I guess, when I think about it. So, for Ole Miss right now, I thought Ross had some normalcy about him. I thought for the first time, he sort of is in his administration just to do the things he kind of wants to do as an AD without all the other stuff going on. You know, I mean, this is a terrible example, but you'll understand this because we talk about this a lot. It's almost like if there wasn't term limits and at some point George W. Bush got to just have a presidency without the war. You know what I mean? Like, it's all over. Now I can focus on the domestic or the economic things and that I've been working on, but there's been this whole other thing I've kind of had to deal with. And I think maybe for the first time, Ross is a little more comfortable, has a bit of breath of fresh air, if you will, whatever your cliche of choice. But just that Ole Miss can, I think the way I wrote it, was have some positive monotony where it's just sort of what you do in the SEC now. You got to go to win games. You got to fundraise. You got to increase fan morale. You got to do all these things. but you're not spending half your day on responses and appeal letters and things that from a PR standpoint are destroying your program.
Yeah, it's why when people, I always get labeled a Bjork apologist on this, and I don't think I'm an apologist for anybody, but when people launch into blaming him for what's happened at Ole Miss in the last few years, I just don't think it's completely fair. It's fair. I don't think it's accurate. Your Bush analogy is a really good one. To extrapolate that a little bit, he was a president that when he was inaugurated, his entire agenda was domestic-based, education, those kind of things. Well, that went up in smoke, man, September the 11th. I pardon the pun, and I don't mean it that way. It completely changed. I mean, that there was no choice but to go away from that agenda and become a wartime president. Whether you agree with some of the decisions or not, I mean, we certainly had enemies. They declared war. We as a country had to engage. So he got away from his domestic agenda for the next 7.5 years. I don't know that really what all has happened at Ole Miss with the football program. I mean, you can, if you want to nitpick Ross Bjork, I'll be honest, the one place where I think you can nitpick him, but you have to put this in perspective. It's easy to say as a neutral observer, well, on draft night, I would have fired Hugh Freeze. Program clearly was out of control. And out of control may be too strong, but that was a terrible look. Anyone knew on that night, they're going to reopen that investigation. They're going to, at the very least, dig into Tunsil even more. They're going to find everything they can. This just got extended again. How did this happen? Heads must roll. And I think that's a fair criticism, but you have to put into perspective. At that point, if you're Ross Bjork and you fire the coach who just won the Sugar Bowl, that would be 4 months earlier. You fire that coach, and the first NOA, as we've talked about, wasn't that bad. It really wasn't that bad. They were going to get hit a little, but they weren't going to get crammed. They weren't going to get creamed on that. They weren't. What would the backlash have been if at that moment in time, Ross Bjork on that, what was that, Chase, the Thursday night, if on Friday morning he announces that he has maybe suspended Hugh Freeze or fired Hugh Freeze, the reaction would have been pitchforks all over Mississippi.
Yeah.
So it's easy to make that comment. I've always said so much of the NCAA response was predetermined. Their path was predetermined. And once you've gone down that path, you can't go down a path of, you can criticize the origination of the path, and I have. I've been very vocal about it. If I'm ever running, and I know Ross would say, well, you don't know what you're talking about, and you don't know how it works, and I'm not going to argue that. I've never spent one day in athletic administration and won't. But if the NCAA shows up on my campus and it's clear that they're there looking for blood, my response is no habla ingles. Which, trust me, as being in a couple of Ubers this week, no habla ingles is kind of a non-starter. It's really hard to go anywhere from there. It's hard to get much communication when one side will not talk. But that's about it. I don't think some of the criticism of Bjork is fair in that regard.
I don't know what it would accomplish, but I think my one thing is just be more vocal about your, maybe not innocence, but about the process as a whole, and have a much more hard line on being more, not even anti-NCAA, but they came across a lot of times when they did speak as pro-NCAA. And I think just having a much firmer tone publicly from the very beginning probably doesn't change anything, but probably does make a little bit of a difference from a perception standpoint. That's the one thing back that I would stick on.
I agree with that. I think from the very beginning, you part of me wonders, you know, how do I say this? A part of me wonders if maybe there was fear inside that building that if you, because let's look back on it. They defended Hugh Freeze pretty vociferously. They stood by Hugh Freeze pretty vociferously. That ended up not being the greatest strategy in the world for issues that were not NCAA related, but maybe there was a fear that we could really end up, we being an administration, could really end up looking stupid. Fighting something that ends up being a really bad look. I don't know. I mean, those are things I'd love to know the pure truth on. I don't know that we'll ever get that, but it would be interesting. I agree with you in principle that it came across like, hey, we believe we trust the process. We believe in the process. There's a process and it works. In fact, those were things that were said. Turns out that was wrong. The process really didn't work. The process wasn't something to be believed in. There was the NCAA absolutely, most certainly had an agenda. And they were, and you and I were some of the first to say it. I mean, we knew it. There was a predetermined outcome.
Kind of looking forward, what else I talked about with Ross? I thought that he gave his honest opinions on what he expects from the major programs in the following calendar year, what he sort of sees as the goals for each team. I mean, with football, I think Ross fully thinks that a winning record is in some aspect is what is going to determine success or failure. He thinks that just because offense is kind of exciting, that if they're going to be better on one side of the ball than the other, offense is the way to go because it kind of generates a little more interest, frankly. Wants to see some semblance. I mean, this is not rocket science. Better defense. He brought up Wesley McGriff's name a couple times without me talking about it, saying that Wesley knew things, had to get better on that side of the ball. I mean, the obvious things, but...
Yeah, but that was interesting to me,
yeah.
That specifically. That specifically was interesting to me in large part because I know a little bit more from off the record conversations with people than I can let on. I don't mean that as a tease. I just, knowing what I know, that was interesting to me.
Yeah, I never said Wesley McGriff's name in 50 minutes, and he mentioned it to me a couple times.
I think let's quit dancing around.
Yeah.
They have to be more fundamentally sound. They have to schematically look better. Their adjustments must look better. That was not a good defense last year. And not only was that not a good defense from a talent standpoint, it wasn't a particularly well-coached defense.
Yeah, I mean, this all comes down to he thinks they have enough talent to win six games or more, and he thinks that they just need to show some type of momentum and improvement as the season moves along. I mean, that's the easiest way to cliff notes this thing and kind of show what he wants from a football standpoint. I also thought that it was interesting. Obviously, Kermit Davis has done an excellent job of getting in the community, of trying to get people to rally around the basketball program. He's got an A-plus as far as everything he can do before he actually steps on the court and coaches a game. But Ross said, and I didn't know this going in, that from a gross revenue standpoint, baseball is making more than basketball right now just because of premium seating and different things where they're not filling the pavilion up, and he thought that the way Kermit has gone about things is a good start to trying to, frankly, right that, because while it's a positive for Ole Miss baseball, LSU's probably the lone place where that's also the case. I mean, let's just keep it real. Basketball needs to produce more revenue than baseball at any SEC school just from an overall revenue standpoint. There's no doubt about it.
It was no question. It was the one criticism of Andy over the years that I always thought was valid as somebody who – frankly, struggles socially. I always said, and I told you this, I said, there's no way to fix that. You can't, you can't force, and not to say Kennedy struggles socially, he doesn't, but he's not a guy that wants to go hang out at the country club or to hang out at the booster functions, and that's not something.
Yeah, he was not a fan of the rubber chicken circuit at all.
He would do it, but he didn't enjoy it. It wasn't something, talking to strangers was not something that he was good at. And so a lot of people who've never met Andy Kennedy, frankly, think he's an ass. The truth is, he's anything but. He's one of the most charming people to talk to once you know him that you'll ever run into. You know that. You socialize with him. And he's very smart. He's very funny. He has a dry wit. It's funny, self-effacing sense of humor that's very funny. He's a lot of fun to talk to, but a lot of fans didn't see that. And if you don't see that and you don't know that, then perception becomes reality. And he didn't do a great job in the community. He did some things there at the end with the Randy, whether it was his idea or somebody else's, it doesn't matter. The Randy Kennedy thing was funny. People saw a side of him that they'd not seen before, but by then they weren't winning enough. And I'll say two things on this. One, Kermit Davis has done everything in the community and from a PR and standpoint that you could possibly want. He's created some excitement, all of those things. He would admit this. At the end of the day, it will come down to whether he wins or not.
Yeah.
That will buy him one, oh hell, it won't even buy him a whole season. It'll buy most of one season. And then after that, it will be about how many points you score and how many points you give up. It won't be about any of that other crap. I know what people say, and they say Andy didn't get out, talk to boosters enough, and he didn't make those old men who hang out at football practices feel good. Nah, Nick Saban's an ass. He doesn't kiss boosters' butts much. He doesn't do all that stuff, but he wins, man. If Nick Saban stopped winning, if Nick Saban, with his 8 gazillion championships, stopped winning at Alabama, they'd run his ass off because he didn't do all the stuff that his predecessors did in terms of making the big boosters from Birmingham feel special. But those big boosters from Birmingham want to win. Kermit Davis, the day of him being judged on nothing but wins and losses is inevitable. He knows it. And I mean, I haven't talked to him about it, but I guarantee you he knows it. So that's part of the basketball problem. Where basketball is really interesting. I think basketball is the one sport that's been impacted the most negatively by the SEC network. Every game is on television. The weekday 8 p.m. starts are just brutal. I mean, I live in Oxford. I live, what, Chase, 10 minutes from campus?
No, tops.
I mean, and those, and yes, I realize that I have to work after the game, and so that affects it. But let's take that then. When Ole Miss plays an 8 o'clock game, it usually takes me an hour and 45 minutes after a game to get my work done. When I get back to my house, it is basically midnight, and I have to wind down and get to sleep. So if I live in Madison, I'm a full 2 hours minimum from the pavilion, and Ole Miss plays an 8 o'clock game. The game ends at 10, just for an even number. Game ends at 10. I get to my car at 10:15. I drive 2 hours like a bat out of hell to Madison at 12:15. I get pull into my driveway in Madison at 12:15. I tiptoe into my house, and if I take my kids or something, I've got to get them to bed. And then the next morning, the kids have to go to school. I have to go to work. When the alternative is, I can turn that game on the SEC Network or ESPN2 or whatever. Every game's on television. I can turn that game on the SEC Network, and I can put it on my 65-inch big screen, and I can watch the game at 8, and it's over at 10. In worst case scenario, they lose on a buzzer beater and I'm really pissed off and it's 10:45 before I can get to sleep. You compare those two choices. That is not a difficult choice for the guy from Madison to make. you don't go to the game.
Well, in the 6 o'clock game, is it makeable unless you get off work half a day early?
Yeah, and so, you know, you've got it. The 6 o'clock game is makeable if you leave at 3:30. And you can, a lot of people can do that, and then the game's over at 8, you're home at 10. It's a little more normal.
That's doable.
It's manageable, but it's hard. And so, you know, and if you're not winning, the weekend games roll around. And you look around the league, and I would watch SEC basketball last year. There were a lot of empty arenas. Ole Miss was not the only school that was struggling to put butts in seats.
It hits every school in the country that doesn't have a population center around it, basically in the town the campus is in. That is a basketball problem in general.
It's a basketball problem in general, I'm certainly not saying that the league should be upset about the SEC network. The SEC network has enabled this league to do things and to go leaps and bounds over where it was. But it's the one sport, in my opinion, that is most negatively impacted. It's the games are on TV. It's, you know, you talked to Ross a little bit about stadiums and stuff, about Vaught Hemingway, and I was in Knoxville not long ago, driving through, taking Carson to a soccer camp, and I talked to someone there who said, here's the truth, the stadium's too big. Talk about Neyland Stadium. It's too big. They'll never fill it up again, because even people in rural Tennessee have big HD screens and all of that stuff. He said that those days are – I think filling up stadiums in general is going to get harder. Baseball is one of those sports that's not – yeah, every game's streamed. But there's a difference still in streaming a game on your big screen and watching one that's produced by a network. You know what I mean?
The other thing is baseball, they don't play conference games on midweek. So Ole Miss is never going to be ever, ever, ever judged by the attendance against Arkansas Pine Bluff on a Tuesday at 6:30. It doesn't matter.
It's a great point. If Arkansas, the Razorbacks, came to town for a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series, you're not getting those crowds. Look no further than the Monday of the NCAA regional. Black Monday, I think we can call it.
Yeah.
The stadium was, it was a big crowd, but it wasn't overflowing. It's Monday night.
There's trepidation every time Ole Miss hosts a Thursday night game because – yeah, if it's a holiday on Sunday, that Thursday's going to draw better. But on your normal days, you'd much rather have that Sunday afternoon game than that Thursday night game.
Of course, there's a Thursday evening game in April. Little Johnny still has soccer. Little Jenny still has soccer or softball or dance. Or little Johnny's got baseball. You've got work the next day. They've got school the next day. They've got homework and exams and tests. Come on. You're not driving to Oxford on a Thursday afternoon and missing all of that stuff and missing school on Friday and all that to go to a baseball game.
To potentially turn around and come back Friday and Saturday, if that's what you were trying to do, you're much more likely just to leave work 2 hours early on Friday, go to Friday and Saturday and go, hey, we're going to drive back Saturday night and then we get a Sunday off, guys.
Of course. Of course. I mean, it's where some of the – and then with baseball, there's the other part with baseball that you don't have with basketball. We've talked about this before. I mean, unless you're in the club thing, you know, you can go to baseball games like I did last night. I went to a baseball game. I had a couple of beers, hung out, relaxed, enjoyed the weather, watched the game, talked to my son, talked to the people behind us. It's a totally different environment. Basketball is more of it's cold weather months. A lot of times, I mean, there were times last year Ole Miss was playing an 8 o'clock game and it was pouring down rain outside. It was really cold. Roads might have been a little spotty. It's hard. I think Davis has done a great job of creating excitement. I think you'll see that early. But to maintain that excitement, he'll have to win. And he's won everywhere he's ever been. So there's every reason in the world to believe that he will win. But a lot of the talk now from, and I'm not referring to Ross here, I'm talking about the people in town, like he's just so much more accessible than Andy was. That's good. And that's nice. And that's a positive. And it was something Ole Miss needed. There's no question. but that only has a certain level of value to it. And at some point that loses its value, and it doesn't take long.
Yeah, we'll continue kind of what Ross talked about, some impressions on that in a second after this break on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Take a break in this podcast. Tell you the name to know in Memphis real estate is Stacy Berry, a Keller Williams agent who's looking to help you find your special place to call home, whether it's downtown, midtown, Germantown, or Collierville. Keller Williams is the number one real estate agency in the world, number one in agents, units sold, and volume sold. And the Berry Home Team is now an integral part of that world-renowned brand. If you're a first-time home buyer looking to downsize, Stacy will evaluate and determine your current home value and sell it quickly for top dollar. So if you're looking to sell a home, buy a home, or invest in real estate, call the Berry Home Team today and let Stacy unlock Memphis for you. You can reach her at 901-481-6420. Stacy Lane Berry at KW.com. That's Stacy with an E, L-A-I-N-E, Berry at KW.com. Or check it out, theberryhometeam.com. The podcast also brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. 662-607-7773 is the number to give MasterCuts a call and let them help you out, whether it's building an outdoor living area, outdoor kitchen area, or just take care of your yard all year long with weed eating, edging, and mowing. They do that for me all the time. They are excellent. And tell them you heard about it on the podcast. They might cut you a deal there as well. 662-607-7773. Podcast also brought to you by Locker Stockers. Take the hassle out of stocking your locker or your suite this football season. A new thing set up for to help you, the customer, really takes the hassle out of something that you might have to go and fit a time period, wait in line a little bit to get in. Instead, they handle the purchase and delivery of the locker or the products to the locker or suite before game day. They're also going to help give you an early sign-up special with a 10% discount on a season package if you sign up before August 1st. 662-586-1487. Or email info@lockerstockers.com for information. And the podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting and understand your market. A leader in condo financing and the float down option. So you can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLo at communitymtg.com. Now back to me and Neil.
This was a guarantee, but I will say that he did confirm Mike has been extended back out to the full 4 years. Everybody thought that would happen. There were incentives that were just automatically in Mike's contract. So, I mean, he's going to get bumps up from winning the SEC West, winning the SEC Tournament, and whatever else. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at his contract recently. But he's back out to the full 4 years. Ross gave a very, very thorough statement of approval for Mike, did mention that next year they really need to get over the hump. I phrased that question. I've been thinking about it for a day or so because, and that's what I, you know, it's funny because you and I sit here and we interview a lot of people and fans get mad a lot of times when they go, why didn't you ask this in this way? Well, you're not going to get an answer. You've got to figure out the way to get an answer that tells you something directly and maybe indirectly at the same time. And I told Ross, again, anybody that listened that's already heard some version of this, and maybe it's not verbatim, but I said, Ross, I get this question a lot, and I don't know how to judge it because I feel like I have as much of a pulse on this program and maybe anybody that's not getting a check by Ole Miss, but Mike's won 40 games, 3 of the last 5 years, blah, 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 all that stuff. I said, how do you take that and judge that versus the fact that Ole Miss has been to one super regional in the last 9 years when you're evaluating the program? And Ross's answer, which upset some people, was that, and I guess it's kind of a variation of your Dan Jennings thing, is he said that Mike, yep, more often than not, puts us in an opportunity. And you've got to be in that opportunity for anything else to matter. And that as long as you had successful seasons that led to those opportunities and playing at home and the best chance to advance, that he felt like everything was a matter of time. And obviously, yeah, you had to look at how to get over the hump, and we've got something we got to look at here. But he definitely wasn't willing to shoot the horse because the saddle fell off. He didn't use that. I'm just making it up, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's a good point. It's what we've talked to. People say it's not just one day. Yeah, it is. It's just one day. It was one day, and that was a bad day.
And it's been one day now, you know, 7 out of 9 years or whatever. I get it. But yeah. it's hard to function.
It would be like, I think, and I know I'm making an analogy that's easy to pick apart here. If you looked at the Cubs, for example, you said they've been to 3 straight National League Championship Series. Well, they lost 2 of them. If you got so angry about the loss to the Mets, the loss to the Dodgers, that you didn't recognize that the goal is to get there. It's the Dan Jennings thing, like you said, my friend, formerly of the Marlins, now in the Nationals front office. It's about making the tournament. Now, he's referring to what in baseball is about a 12-team tournament. It's about making the tournament. Once you make the tournament, anything can happen is sort of a point, which is true. And so you can't look at the past season, for example, and say it was a disaster. You can't, as a journalist, ask a question of the athletics director where you're emotional and you say, that Monday really sucked and it pissed me off. Why didn't you fire Mike? His response would be, how could you fire a coach? How could you even the thought of making a change could never have even crossed his mind. Because you and I talked about this. If you're Ross Bjork, take everything else out. Well, that Sunday night that Ole Miss beat Tennessee Tech to advance to the final, while Tennessee Tech and whoever it was, St. Louis or whoever, were playing each other, Missouri State, thank you, sorry. When they were playing each other on that Sunday night, if you're Ross Bjork, whether you're sitting in that stadium or you're sitting at home or you're driving or whatever you're doing, in your mind, you're thinking, boy, this has been one hell of a successful baseball season.
Oh, I mean, I told you. He told me that directly. He was sitting by me during that game. He sat by me for probably 4.5 innings that day. And, I mean, and there was no reason not to. I mean, spewed nothing but positives about everything that was going on around that entire program at the time.
Which backs up my point that on this season, this one season, it was indeed one day. Now, why does that day happen? We talked to Clement the other day. I mean, they got tight. Is that all a reflection on Mike? I don't know. What I know is that I don't, and I've looked at it. You know me. I mean, people think I'm a Bianco apologist. I don't know Mike. I mean, we know each other in passing. We speak. We're friendly, but never had anything resembling a meaningful conversation in the 10 years that I've lived in Oxford. Hey, how are you? That's it. And that's not a criticism. We just, our paths don't cross. But I don't have a relationship with him. I don't see how you can look at the job that he's done and give it anything but an A. That's just me. They have not had the postseason success, but they've gotten to the postseason. And sometimes the postseason is about, and I know people hate this word, but sometimes the postseason is about luck.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I don't know how, and I mean, you know, because a lot of people go, well, Mike's the lone variable, and I understand that. But I have such a hard time going, okay, what happened on that Monday? How is that relatable to what happened in College Station in 2012 or in Raleigh in 2013 or in L.A. in 2015? And it becomes a very difficult exercise in your mind to try to figure out what's actually relatable at all between those different circumstances.
We had Mike Clement on the show, and I don't know Mike. Certainly you do. I don't. He didn't come across as a real tight guy to me.
No, he's not tight at all. He's.
I mean, so
he's probably as loose as Godwin is. They're very similar in demeanors. If anything, Godwin might be a little more rigid at times.
And that's who's around the hitters. Sometimes people want something so bad that they try too hard. I mean, I remember reading this about the Red Sox when the Red Sox finally broke the quote curse, end quote. It helped that they had guys like Manny Ramirez and Kevin Millar and some people like that who, frankly, Chase just didn't really care. Just didn't care.
Yeah, the idiots or whatever they called them.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs won the World Series with John Lackey and John Lester and Aroldis Chapman and guys like that who, I'm not saying they don't care. They don't care about their jobs, but they don't care if fans are upset. They don't care. They're going to do their job. They're going to go do their thing. And when it's over, it's over. I mean, if anything, those kids that night and the coaches that night wasn't about being tight as much as maybe they cared too damn much. And that's a weird thing to say, I know, but it wasn't a lack of effort. If anything, it was too much effort.
Yeah, I think there was that. And while those kids weren't around, and we've talked about this, I mean, we're going to move on in a second. I do think the lack of ever getting all the way there at home is something that is affecting the entire environment, from fans down to players to coaches, everybody. It's Swayze, we talked about it. It becomes this weird place. And because of that, I think that's a deal. No, it's not at all. I get it. I understand it completely.
People go, well, it's the fans' fault. No, it's not the fans' fault by any stretch. But if you can't, and look, if you're in that stadium emotionally, you do not feel what we're talking about. But if you're in that stadium, like I don't go to baseball games. Chase covers it really well. It doesn't really work into my schedule. I don't socialize in Oxford. I don't have friends in Oxford. I don't go hang out with my friends at the ballpark because, frankly, I would be sitting there by myself. So I don't go to the games. It was one of my first games in Oxford in a long time. And, man, I walked into that stadium and I felt it. And on Monday night, it was palpable. You could touch it. You could, as someone who was not emotionally invested, you could feel it. It was in the air. It was almost like humidity. It was there. You could feel it. That was not an air of, hey, we have a chance to clinch a regional tonight. That was an, oh my God, tonight, this, we're going to lose and this is going to be awful and I can't leave. I can't watch. That was the people slowing down for a car crash. It was palpable. How do you overcome that as a program? I don't know. You win somehow. It might be recruiting a little different kind of kid. But that was a team full of really good kids. Thomas Dillard was trying really hard. Maybe too hard. Instead of just trying, hey, let's get on base. I've got to hit the home run to tie this up. There's just that environment that was there. That's why getting back to the point about getting rid of Mike for what? For winning? For putting your program in that spot? And I realize the frustration, and the frustration's valid, but the we must make a change here. That's illogical, frankly, and I've thought about it. We've had 2 months now. I mean, I've thought about it. It's illogical. You can't justify it. It would look so knee-jerk and stupid that the next. I mean, literally. I mean, let's just hypothetically. We played the hypothetical on Hugh Freeze. If you just got so pissed off as the AD that you said, you know, that's it, man. We can't win in the postseason. Got to make a change. I know he's done a lot of stuff in the regular season, but this is about postseason, and we got to get there. The look that would have had would have been, you did what? Inside the field, I don't know how many coaches would truly want to step into that environment. There'd be a lot of coaches that would be willing to Jim Schlossnagel you and use that job to kind of as leverage to get a few things they want at their current job. But I don't know how many coaches would say, you know, this is what I want to go do.
Well, no, it would put put an expectation that would baffle a lot of people. But
and you have to when you're looking at how you evaluate how you run your program. If you're an AD, one of the things that you have to do is you have to, in my opinion, and I've never been an AD, I'll never be one, but I want my jobs to be at all times attractive, where one day Mike Bianco or Kermit Davis or Matt Luke or somebody walked in and said, hey, I've got a health issue and I've got to walk away. I've got to step away. I can't do this. Where, okay, unexpected, I can go shop my job and my job's attractive in the field. That's what I want. I want my place to be attractive. You make a change for Mike Bianco right now, and the reputation you would have inside the industry, which is very important, would be an incredibly negative reputation.
Just you in general, what's the point where you go, how many years? I mean, what would have to happen for this situation to be recurring for you to go, do we have an issue here?
I think they do have an issue. But I think the issue is not what people think it is. I don't think it's tight. I think it's caring too much. I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah.
Other than you just break through. And, you know, and it's one of those goofy things, right? Where if on that Monday night in the eighth inning, Ole Miss is down a run, I think. You know, you get a single and a Dillard gets a hold of one and hits one out of the ballpark. It's a completely different conversation the next day. So I don't know. I mean, what was the conversation going to be had they hosted a super regional and lost to Texas? What was the conversation going to be if they got into the College World Series? They would have been paired up with Arkansas, who was playing really well, and they get bounced from Omaha quickly. I don't know. I understand fan frustration. I completely get it. I can relate to it. My guess, and I haven't spoken to Mike about it, you have. My guess is that loss was that day was one of the more painful days for him. It was probably a day that he had a hard time getting over. It's probably a day that he had a hard time moving on from. It's probably a day that he still thinks about 6 weeks later.
Yeah, he told me it potentially hurt more than any loss he's ever had in his career.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. For me, if I have a coach who's winning at that level, winning at a level you're, in this case, the national seed, you're hosting regionals, you're in position to host super regional, I don't know that there really ever comes a point where it's anything other than really frustrating, but that would be moving on from success.
Yeah, the last two things on this, I think that, again, winning is more important than anything else. We've talked about that with Kermit and Mike and Matt and anyone, but I do think also that there's an extra appreciation for the way Mike handles everything, the guy he is in the community over the last 18 years, and the way Ross never has to worry about that program. I think that plays a role as well. And then the other thing that's going to create the dynamic that we'll talk about for months, and I ran into a couple people in the grocery store yesterday that I knew that parroted this without me even really mentioning it. It's going to be a strange baseball season because they're going to be ranked in the top 10 or 12 in the country to start the year. They're going to be one of these contenders again, a team that's supposed to probably compete against LSU to win the SEC West. And to a lot of fans, the regular season is not going to mean anything. It is going to be a situation to where if they win 32 games in the regular season but then end up in Omaha, that's a success. And if they win 50 and then don't make it, that's going to be seen as a failure to a decent percentage of this fan base.
Which means, and I agree with you completely, and I've written about it, but it also means that in June, when that regional comes back to Oxford, that environment, that atmosphere comes back with it. And so the challenge for Mike Bianco is that he's got to try to figure out a way to tell his kids and to get his kids to do it, which is just, hey, go play baseball. Don't pay attention to this stuff. Just go play baseball.
Yeah, you've won 48 times or whatever. Go win two more. All right, here we go. Good.
Yeah, go win. Yeah, that's – some of that is just luck of the draw, and some of that is – again, you know, that was that goofy day where you're starting. There's an old baseball cliche that sticks around for a reason. Momentum is as good as the next day's starting pitcher. Ole Miss had momentum. I'm not pinning this on James McArthur at all, but he was not good
in that Monday noon start, and they lost momentum. Tennessee Tech got it, and then in the next game, it was a super close game that neither team got anything going offensively.
Ole Miss lost the game in the seventh inning when they were up a run and they couldn't add on.
Yeah.
And they had bases loaded with one out or whatever it was, and they couldn't add on that would have, A, given them a cushion and insurance, and B, it would have settled everybody freaking down.
Sure. At that spot, instead of striking out, someone hits a base hit to center field but scores a run, moves everybody along a base. All of a sudden, the stadium's got a different feel to it. And the kids start to relax a little. Hitting is absolutely contagious. It's baseball, man. Sports. Sports are that way. I mean, it's just that's sports. You see basketball teams go on runs. You see basketball teams get big. The Houston Rockets, Chase, won 67 games last year, had the best record in the NBA, and they get into a Western Conference Finals game and miss 30 straight three-pointers or something insane like that? You don't think that's crazy? You don't think that's in your head? You don't think that's psychological? Go to an NBA game and go early and watch them shoot around as they warm up. You'll see dudes that never play go 19 of 20 from the three-point line.
Yeah.
There's a psychological aspect to sports that, frankly, makes it fun, makes it interesting, but it can go the other way on you. And that game was lost between the ears. And it wasn't because they didn't care. It wasn't because they're bad kids. None of it. If anything, they're really good kids who cared too much.
Yeah, we'll wrap up the show with a few more thoughts after this break on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
We take a break from the podcast to tell you that the podcast is brought to you in part by Billy's Pecans. Guests join us throughout the week on the Billy's Pecans hotline. Check out their selection of pecans. It's the cinnamon spice pecans are fantastic. My favorite, the toasted pecans. Simple, but you just can't beat them. Dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier, and more. They also have other things, all sorts of goodies. Pecans and chocolate, southern pecan toffee, cheese crispies, pecan brittle, coffee cakes, sauces, jellies, and more. All of that at Billy's Pecans. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, all without that 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. Also, OUB offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And the podcast is brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South celebrating 10 years of business this season. If you try 7 South Tailgating once, you'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South will set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail. Whether you're coming up for one game, just all of the SEC games, or you're coming up for all of the games, and whether you have a very intricate tailgate or the simplest of tailgates, 7 South Tailgating can hook you up, make the process of tailgating in the Grove far more enjoyable than having to do it yourself. 7SouthTailgating.com. Now back to the Oxford Exxon podcast.
This just popped up. Somebody sent me this tweet, Neil. We've been talking about getting fans into stadiums and different things. Darren Revelle of ESPN tweeting this morning that Mississippi State's following the Atlanta Falcons lead, reducing concession prices for next season. bottled soda and water slash 50%, nachos, hot dogs, and soft pretzels down 60%, and what a play on words state is calling more value for concession prices.
That's probably smart. I mean, whatever you have to do to get people into stadiums, and if you can, whatever negatives you can erase, and, you know, $10 sodas is probably something you can erase.
I was told late yesterday. I know Ole Miss fought the 11 a.m. start time for Texas Tech and didn't get much help there, but I'm told that from Tech's side, which they thought because of their alumni markets and being, you know, at least in the same state, they would kind of carry it a little bit. I'm heard they've sold woefully small amount of tickets for that game in Houston.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard that's really bad from, you know, probably both sides to an extent, but I think Texas Tech had a little more of the pressure on them for that game, and they have not necessarily delivered in a season where they're picked 8th out of 10 teams in the Big 12.
Well, I think it'll be mostly an Ole Miss crowd.
Oh, do you really?
And it's frankly, yeah, I do. I think Ole Miss will take a lot of people to Houston. Ole Miss always travels well.
They like those neutral site games.
They like those, and as you and I have talked about, I think it's as big of a game when you – it's weird to say this because there's obviously, at least at this point, there's no bowl game to go to. There's no postseason ramifications. But from a momentum standpoint, from a fan apathy slash expectation standpoint, it's a huge game for Ole Miss. It's just hard for me to get away from that. I think it's a huge game for Wesley McGriff. I think it's a huge game in general. I think it's that game is going to swing a lot of moods because, I mean, the truth is it's the difference between starting 2-1 and 1-2. And 1-2 has a completely different feel than 2-1. And, yes, I'm giving them a loss to Alabama. If Ole Miss beats Alabama, I think this season that would be considered a monumental upset. So it's very hard to count on that. It's a hard schedule. There's a lot of potholes in it. It's the difference between going to LSU in late September with the chance to – really kind of set yourself up to have some fun, or going to LSU with it being, God, if we lose this one, it's going to be hard to crawl out of this hole. And you get back into that momentum thing. Football seasons have momentum. And for Ole Miss, that momentum gets established pretty early, in my opinion.
One thing that Ross did try to explain a little bit, I know a lot of people were interested, and it was talk on the board about it, is the rewards, the points program that's been implemented for this season, the changes that have been made. And as most people remember, there was legislation that prohibits tax-deductible activities on season tickets, on giving for athletics in certain ways. And Ole Miss, basically what they've done is they've tried to get around that. So they have changed up into a couple different things. You've got the money that's necessary for season tickets, and then you've got additional gifts on top of that. And they're still trying to make a percentage or all or whatever it is of the additional gifts tax deductible. They're using some loopholes or however you want to call it there. But what that is doing is that is minimizing a little bit the amount of priority or rewards that goes with the standard ticket, because that was kind of the only way to keep a tax deductible portion of this per Ross. And it's fairly complicated. There's a video on their website that tries to explain it. I've watched it. It does a better job than I'm doing right now, and frankly a better job than Ross was trying to explain to me just in words. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but to maintain some ability to make things tax deductible for the fans, they had to decrease some priority for the lower levels of ticket giving. It just kind of is what it is, but it's the decision they've made. So all I got there, just throwing it along.
Okay. Yeah, well, it was good people got an explanation. I know a lot of people were worked up about it. It's, frankly, that's one of those things you and I have talked about before. It's kind of, in many ways, outside the purview of what we do. So, but I'm glad that people got an answer.
Yeah, that was just something I keep getting asked about here or there. Facilities, kind of the one last thing. And again, he mentioned that schools are struggling over decades and years on when to stop adding on and when to build new stadiums. Ross was not saying that a new Vaught Hemingway is anywhere near in the works, strictly just from a psychological and an understanding landscape of what's next. When does that become a thought? It was more of just an interesting topic than it was something that was going to be in any sort of application. in the new future for Ole Miss. I can't see where Ross Bjork's going to be anywhere close to the AD when hardly any SEC school makes that decision to tear down and start over. But, I mean, Vaught Hemingway's been fairly mismatched, mix and matched, however you want to put it, over the decades. So that's why we had the conversation. He said that once baseball's done, the main sports are pretty solid from a facility and infrastructure standpoint, that at some point they want to talk about new softball stadium, new soccer stadium, improvements to those. But, you know, they've done a lot to the track. They just built the tennis center. They've done some different things to Gillum to help volleyball. And then obviously the three major sports and then four, if you want to count women's basketball, have been helped out tremendously. So they have gotten to a point where there's not some huge push from a construction standpoint. They're pretty happy where they are right now overall from a campus landscape.
All these schools, not just Ole Miss, a lot of these schools. And it's like you said, it's not down the road. It's way down the road. But at some point, they're going to have to address these old facilities. I mean, they're not going to have some of the creature comforts that it's like baseball. I mean, you go to these new parks and then compare them to the old parks. And the old parks better have a hell of a lot of charm, or else they're just old parks. So, anyway, we'll see. I mean, that's a long way down the road. That won't be something that, unless Ross is planning on being at Ole Miss for another 40, 50 years, it's probably not something he's going to have to address.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, it's kind of like somebody asked Kendall, is Mississippi State's new stadium the best in college baseball? And he kind of laughed on Twitter. He said, well, yeah, until the next time the SEC and another SEC team decides to start all over and build again. That's just the way it works. It never stops with this league.
So, right.
Paul Feinbaum got his new contract with ESPN. No one called his bluff.
Oh, thank God.
Got a little more cash, I see. So.
Oh, thank God.
Thought you'd be happy about that. Relieved.
Yes, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
So. Thank God.
All right. Well, coverage on rebelgrove.com. Check that out. I'll have some stuff. You can listen to the Ross Bjork interview, obviously, yesterday and all the different places that you like to listen to our podcast. You found this one, so you can find that one as well. And we will talk to you again on Monday.